This is your host, Ray Boland, on ID the Future, the podcast for intelligent design. And my guest today is Dr. Jonathan Wells, author of the book Icons of Evolution and the most recent, Zombie Science, which is an update of Icons of Evolution. And we're going to be talking a little bit today about how to use zombie science as a resource for teachers in addressing some of the newer standards here in the state of Texas that I was involved in helping to get these streamlined, as they call it. Before I bring in Jonathan, let me talk a little bit about what happened here in Texas recently. And what we were doing is the State Board of Education here in Texas has a lot of authority or power, if you will, as far as what gets taught in our public schools here in Texas. And they've passed standards back in 2009 for all subjects K through 12, and they were receiving some concerns and even complaints from teachers about there's just too much material. We can't get it all taught, and whatever is in the TEKS, the Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills is what that stands for ninth grade biology particularly, and they needed to streamline those, needed to cut it back some. So they asked for applications for people to serve on a committee. I applied. I was accepted onto the committee for ninth grade biology, and the only thing we could do was take something out or move it. We couldn't add anything. We couldn't change wording. Couldn't do anything like that. Well, it became pretty clear that there were a couple of standards that most of the members of this committee that I was a part of wanted to get rid of immediately. And one was simply called 7B, and the student expectation here was to analyze and evaluate scientific explanations concerning any data of sudden appearance, stasis, and sequential nature of groups in the fossil record. That's what was already there from 2009. Well, when that topic came up, they wanted to get rid of it completely, and it was fairly quickly discussed, and we had to take a vote. Essentially, it was, I think, 7-2 to take it out. I was one of the two who wanted to keep it in. But they were saying things like analyze and evaluate for this kind of information is developmentally appropriate for ninth graders. And so the recommendation our committee was making to the state board was to take it out. And another one concerned origin of large molecules in the cell. It was stated this way, analyze and evaluate the evidence regarding formation of simple organic molecules and their organization into long, complex molecules having information, such as the DNA molecule for self-replicating life. Again, part of the complaint here was just that's far too complex for ninth graders. They haven't had chemistry yet, and the list went sort of on and on to a degree. But essentially, our committee voted to take that out as well. Now, we can recommend that, but the state board makes the final decision. And with various rounds of testimony before the state board and representing myself, representing our committee, it seemed that several on the board, on the State Board of Education, wanted to keep those. And so there were amendments offered to kind of put them back in, but with slightly different language and changing the verbs. And instead of using sudden appearance, using abrupt appearance. Why abrupt appearance was preferable over sudden, I really don't get it. But we were successful in getting those topics particularly put back in to the state standards for ninth grade biology. What 7B reads as now and was approved and voted on in April of 2017 was examine scientific explanations of abrupt appearance and stasis in the fossil record. And then for DNA, we said that the standards now read, identify components of DNA, describe how information for specifying the traits of an organism is carried in the DNA, and evaluate scientific explanations for the origin of DNA. So we managed to get those back in, and actually my committee, when looking at those amendments and being asked, do you approve of these or not? Well, everybody on the committee said, well, those are okay. So it was quite amazing to me that two of the things they wanted to take out completely were essentially put back in just with slightly different language and a little bit different emphasis, I could say. But now I want to bring in Jonathan Wells and talk to him about how his new book, Zombie Science, might be used by a biology teacher who's using these standards. And first of all, Jonathan, I want to come to what's now 7B states, examine scientific explanations of abrupt appearance and stasis in the fossil record. So what from zombie science might a teacher be able to use as a resource for that particular expectation?
Well, I should begin by saying I do not think that a high school teacher should assign zombie science to students. But I do think teachers could use the book profitably as a resource. For example, I do talk about the phenomenon of stasis and sudden appearance or abrupt appearance. In fact, I cite paleontologists Niles Eldridge and Stephen Jay Gould, who called this pattern punctuated equilibria, the punctuation being the sudden or abrupt appearance and the equilibrium being the stasis. Okay. And according to Gould, this is a quote actually, every paleontologist always knew, unquote, that it is the dominant pattern in the fossil record. So it's pretty much everywhere. There are not isolated examples. Just about every fossil pattern fits this.
So sudden appearance is not just happens every once in a while, but this is a standard pattern of almost all fossil series in the fossil record.
Yes, it is definitely the dominant pattern. Fossil species appear in the fossil record. They endure for a certain time, sometimes a very long time, and then they often disappear. But you don't see in the fossil record one species gradually turning into another. So it's a common feature of the record. Paleontologists know it, and students should know it.
Well, what to you would seem to be so important for students to have it clarified for ninth graders that this is the standard pattern within the fossil record? I mean, isn't that the way textbooks are going to represent the fossil record anyway, if that's the standard pattern?
Unfortunately, it's not the way textbooks represent it. When I wrote Icons of Evolution in 2000, I showed that many of the illustrations used in biology textbooks to teach students about evolution misrepresent the evidence. And in Zombie Science, my new book, I show that the icons are still there. So the textbooks have not been substantially corrected. They still mislead students into thinking that we can go to the fossil record and see evolution, and we can't.
Hmm. Now, one fossil series that definitely is showing up more and more in some of these high school biology textbooks, and you address it in Zombie Science, is this whole idea of whales evolving from a walking land mammal. So is there a pattern here as well of abrupt appearance in the fossil record for where these whales came from?
Yes. In Darwin's time, people knew of two fossil whales, but no intermediates between those fossils and any land animal. Then in the 1980s, a wolf-sized land animal was discovered that had a bone in its middle ear that up to that point had only been found in whales. So it was called the Pakistani whale, even though it was like a wolf. In the intervening years between then and now, some other fossils have been found that have been called intermediates between the Pakistani whale and true whales. But they're really fossils of animals that were more like sea lions, which are very different from whales. Whales have to live their entire lives in the water, whereas sea lions are amphibious rather than fully aquatic. So in each case, the fossils that are found appear, then disappear later. They don't morph into each other. In fact, each one would have to lose features it had to become some other species. So no serious paleontologist thinks that any of these are ancestral to any others. But students are taught this anyway, and that's a big mistake, and teachers should know about that. And in the book Zombie Science, a teacher can find references to the scientific literature that back up the things I'm saying.
Good. So there is a pretty extensive bibliography that they can either find articles online or at least quote from some of them, I presume, from your book?
Yes. I cite a lot of technical articles. Most of them, the articles, that is, would probably not be suitable for a ninth grader, but some might be, and some portions of even the technical articles might be, if the teacher wanted to distribute them.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the second item that I mentioned earlier in this podcast. That is what is now the standard for what will be called 6A in the Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills, which reads, identify components of DNA, describe how information for specifying the traits of an organism is carried in the DNA, and evaluate scientific explanations for the origin of DNA. Can a teacher use zombie science to help teach that expectation?
Yes, I think so. One famous icon of evolution that's still in the textbooks is a 1953 experiment that supposedly showed how the chemical building blocks of DNA and proteins could have formed on the early Earth. Well, the experiment didn't do anything of the sort, and no serious scientist really thinks that anymore, or very few do. But it's still there in the textbooks. And even if the experiment had succeeded, it would not explain how we get the information-rich sequences in DNA that we find nowadays. And so I have a whole chapter on DNA, the secret of life.
Okay.
It goes into some depth on that. And again, there are lots of references to the technical literature.
So I'm particularly fascinated that we managed to get into these standards, the last part of this student expectation, which reads, and evaluate scientific explanations for the origin of DNA. Are there any truly scientific explanations for the origin of DNA today?
What we have are a collection of mishmash sort of speculations. Again, no one has clearly shown how the building blocks could have originated, much less how they could have assembled into the complex information-rich molecules that we have now. So a lot of speculation, but no really testable explanations.
Well, that brings up the even larger question from an evolutionary point of view. Do you discuss at all in zombie science where within the DNA molecule, even if you can get long-stranded molecules of DNA, how in a purely naturalistic or materialistic context can you get information to be carried by the DNA? Are there currently some scientific explanations trying to address where the information comes from in the DNA?
Well, the only source we know of that can create complex specified information is intelligence, mind. And since science these days is dominated by materialistic philosophy, it excludes that category of explanations. So it's basically a lot of hand-waving about how the subunits might have accidentally assembled and gradually become more information-rich. But again, it's speculation. By the way, when I say zombie science, I mean materialistic philosophy masquerading as evidence-based science.
Mm-hmm. So I would recommend to any high school biology teacher to not try to include the idea of information only coming from intelligence in their biology classroom. That would bring in political issues they just don't want to have to deal with just yet. But if you're only limited to materialistic scientific explanations for the origin of the information in DNA, there really isn't anything to point to, is there?
No. And I agree with you that in a public high school, it's not a good idea to bring in intelligent design to the science classroom. But the fact is, without it, we have no explanation for where this information came from.
And from my perspective, I think even that lack of a scientific explanation for the origin of information in DNA, I think would be a very useful tool in the hands of a biology teacher to be able to say, look, we don't have all the answers figured out yet. There are some huge issues that are waiting to be solved. We don't know where this information has come from. We don't know how a natural process could accomplish that. And you just leave it in that context. Maybe you'll stir up some young researcher who wants to spend some time with that and see that as something they could develop their life around, because we make a mistake, I think, when all we offer are answers to all the important questions.
I agree. I think I don't know is an appropriate answer to many scientific questions.
I can speak for myself as a teacher. I don't like it when I say I don't know. I feel like somehow I'm not fulfilling my role. But we really have to be honest about those kind of things, and that engenders a curiosity that can last a lifetime for a young student.
Yes, I agree.
Well, Jonathan, it's been great talking with you again today. Again, this has been ID the Future, the podcast for intelligent design, and I'm your host, Ray Boland, and thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.